Welcome to Mission Driven, a conversation about how startups leverage their social mission as competitive advantage. Mission Driven is hosted by Better Ventures, a seed stage venture fund in Oakland, California, backing entrepreneurs using science and technology to address the world's biggest challenges. You can find us on the web at better.vc and on Twitter at Better Ventures. Lilia Novak-Bori, Kapor Capital. So great to be talking with you today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here, i.e. in our office.
Yay. Yeah, here we are in Kapor Center on Broadway in Uptown Oakland. If for those who haven't been here, it's sort of like a rite of passage. If you come to the East Bay, you have to come to Kapor Center and visit people, get out on that roof patio, amazing views of the city. Makes you want to move to Oakland if you don't already live here.
I agree. I've always been an in-office fan, but we are kind of lucky with our office. It's a nice office to be into. So hopefully as COVID goes away a little more, we get to have a lot more events here at the Kapor Center.
Indeed. Yeah. And in keeping with your whole ethos, you guys bought a building in Oakland and renovated it thoroughly. And you're just right here smack dab in the middle.
Yeah, well, so part of what Kapor Capital, the whole thing in terms of venture capital, and we used to have right outside the building, there's a billboard, and we actually bought space on the billboard for like the first year we were here that said tech for good and good for tech. Because I think for us, a lot of people were left out of the positive things that tech brought into the world. And so, you know, they were excluded in that they couldn't afford the technology. They were excluded from the great jobs that tech brought. And so part of our reason for moving Kapor Capital to Oakland is, one, Oakland has been at the forefront of social movements, you know, whether it be the Black Panthers, you know, what we're creating now in terms of the tech ecosystem. So we really wanted to be somewhere where we could be immersed in the community and help build the community as we built our brand. And so part of it is, you know, having this center here. The other thing we used to do pre-COVID was have First Friday series where we would have people on the rooftop, we would have food, we would bring in different speakers from parts of the tech ecosystem, helping people, you know, figure out, one, if you want to build a startup, how do you do that? If you want to work for a tech company, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, I think the big thing was is like demystifying what tech was, because a lot of times people didn't understand if they weren't part of that community. And we've done that with so many things. You know, I think the First Friday series is one of it. The building is another. You know, the fellowship program that I created is another thing. Is like, you know, for so long, venture was you could only get access to jobs in venture if you knew someone. And so for me, I felt so grateful to have a job in venture. And I felt like I was given an opportunity. It was required upon me to kind of provide that opportunity to others. And so created the fellowship program, you know, over 12 years ago now. And the goal of that was like, how do we take people, start off with underrepresented communities. We've since expanded it to folks who care about those communities. You know, how do we take folks who have an interest, a genuine passion for tech, and then give them their first venture job with the idea in mind that just providing that first step will help kind of on their progressive path to getting a venture job or a tech career.
Yeah. And this industry has been pretty hard to access over time. And so it's somewhat unique how wide open your door is.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much more work to be done with the Silicon Valley Bank collapse. I think folks still see what that shows to the general public. A lot of folks were like, well, let's not bail out Silicon Valley Bank because it's a bunch of rich elites. And so I think that there's still a misconception of what tech is and who does it touch. Because I was thinking about like our companies who unfortunately had money in the bank, and some of them, you know, they're healthcare companies too. So they're employing nurses. And so, you know, people are not thinking if a tech bank collapse, a nurse, there will be a fallout there. Or, you know, there's ag tech companies, there's prop tech. So folks doing real estate, that, you know, tech is now touching every single industry. And I think because of the insular nature of it, folks still don't understand how widespread it is, but they also still see it as, you know, an exclusive environment that so many people are not invited into. And so when something big goes bad, you know, people see it as like, oh, it's the elites that are affected and they, you know, it's their problem and not a larger, wider scale problem.
Yeah. And while there are plenty of, you know, sort of rich and elite people, the day-to-day person getting their paycheck from Silicon Valley Bank is probably less well paid than most people. They're banking on that stock being worth something someday. And as you and I both know, it doesn't always work out.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it bubbled down even to like Etsy. Like I know, like, you know, say I'm home moms who like do Easter baskets that they sell for extra money to pay for their kids' ballet lesson. Because Silicon Valley Bank collapsed and Etsy had their money there, you know, I think there's three steps down. It's like, who is really negatively being affected? Like who, you know, because the rich people, most rich people, I don't know, I'm not rich yet, so one day. But you would, you know, they probably have diversity in terms of where they keep their money. And so one bank account loss is probably not the end all be all for them. But if you think of like this mom who, you know, was counting on that extra income to pay for lessons for her kid or braces or anything else that may be seen as an extra expense, that loss of even $30, $50, $100 probably, or even the delay of it, probably meant a lot to her.
Hallelujah. And I think your average person in the heartland of the country doesn't quite realize that. But, you know, over time, we'll get there. And I think maybe the collapse is helping some people learn more about it. Let's take a step back. We jumped right in there. Talk about KPOR Capital. What is it? Why is it special? You know, how long have you been here? What's your role? All that.
Yeah, so KPOR Capital is an early stage social impact venture capital firm specifically focused on technology that closes gaps of access and opportunity for low-income communities and communities of color, so specifically African-American, Latino, and Native communities. You know, I had the chance to start at KPOR as an analyst way back when Mitch KPOR and Frida KPOR Klein were taking what was their angel investing work and turning it into the ecosystem of KPOR Capital. It was really great to be on the ground floor of that and seeing that in action, because I remember when we started, because we started off as a traditional venture capital fund investing in everything, not specifically social impact. You know, part of the decision to move to just social impact is we were co-housed with the nonprofit at the time called Level Playing Field Institute, now SMASH, and the foundation. And so Frida was like, you know, we're doing work on this side that is social impact oriented. It doesn't make sense that our investing is not. So we should bring everything into alignment. And at that point in time, there were so many naysayers who were like, you're never going to have enough deal flow if you just focus on impact. You know, companies will never come to you, will never want you to be an investor, and most importantly, you'll never make money. And so now, many, many years later, it's great to see that we proved those folks wrong and that we've really set up an ecosystem and helped develop an ecosystem of impact investing, specifically impact investing in the U.S., because I think we had seen some of that internationally. And I'm excited to see it grow. And I feel like, it, you know, where we are today in terms of the impact investing fields, it needs to get, you know, bigger. And we see a lot more change that needs to be made.
And we got all those same objectives ourselves. We started well after you all, but 2010, 2011, and it was just not a friendly environment. The questions we got were effectively, and how are you going to lose my money?
Oh, wow.
You know, we're just a lot of people, you know, not interested in mission as a competitive advantage, which is what this whole thing's about. They think of it as concessionary. You know, you're going to trade off your returns for getting some social impact. And like, I'll do that with philanthropy instead. But so let's not go too far down that one. We should say the KPORs built arguably, or Frida KPOR Klein and Mitch KPOR built one of the most iconic companies in the history of computing, and I guess Silicon Valley there in Cambridge, but quote unquote Silicon Valley, you know, really was a powerhouse in the days of the early PC. They had a massive exit after not that many years and have just phenomenal resources, and they've put it all into KPOR Center, Smash/Level Playing Field, Kpor Capital. Do you want to say a bit about it? Started as a single LP fund, funded only by them, right? And then you and Brian and others have kind of taken this now to become a multi-LP, and talk about that.
Yeah, no, so as you mentioned, they had this amazing exit. And so the wealth from that exit and other great investments they've made along the way. And I just want to say, because I think Mitch gets a lot of credit as investing, as an awesome investor. I don't think Frida gets her flowers enough. You know, she has also equally brought in a number of really great deals that have gone on to unicorn status as well. I mean, I think she is the voice of inclusion and diversity at Kpor, but people don't give her enough credit for how great of an investor. So I just want to make sure to mention that as well. But I think to your earlier point, we were lucky for the first 10 years of the fund to have just to have a single LP. So we didn't have to go out and raise money. I think the great thing about that is it allowed us to try things out, and we didn't have people saying, how are you going to lose our money today? You know, we didn't realize how easy we had it until we went out to try to raise. I mean, I think if anything, it helped build empathy for a lot of the founders that we were working with. You know, I think in the end, we had 350 pitch meetings that we had to go to. You know, so I should say, so there was succession planning. Mitch and Frida turned over the fund to Brian and I, and this had been a process that they had been planning for a while. So for our fund two, you know, they were stepping back. The majority of the deals, 80%, were led by Brian and I because they were part of that transitioning process. And then for fund three, it was plans that we were going to take over the fund. And so it was us on this fundraising journey. And the hard thing was, even though it was our fund three, it was our first time raising outside capital. And so we didn't have an LP base to build from. And, you know, we thought we would be given more credit for doing fund one and fund two. And sadly, that was not the case. I think, you know, people didn't know where to put us, for lack of a better word. They're like, well, you hadn't raised before. So are you an emerging manager? Is this your first time? I think, you know, we got some criticism like, oh, are you only in this position because Mitch and Frida liked you? So that was really hard. I mean, I think, you know, I was saying earlier that when things are sad, it's like you go get ice cream. There was a lot of ice cream trips because there was a lot of like really sad conversations for me where I started questioning like, oh, do I have the talent or am I equipped to do this? And I think, you know, anyone who's fundraised and have had to talk about their idea, you know, a couple hundred times, it's the biggest way to poke holes in your idea, like, you know, saying it out loud a couple of times. But I think it was good for us too, because I think it helped us strengthen our pitch and also helped ensure, you know, help build more belief in what we were trying to do. And if you don't believe in what you're doing, then I think you probably give up around like the 150th call. You're probably like, I don't think I want to do this. But I think thankfully Brian and I were really committed to the next phase of the fund and really committed to what we were building. In the end, we ended up at a little over 126 million, which really excited about that and thankful to have had Mitch and Frida as the anchor for our fundraise.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for that overview. And well done. I mean, that's no small task to have raised a fund that size when you hadn't had to go out to outside LPs before. I know just how tough that is, and well done. Let's see. So talk about so it's 126 million, check size, stage, industries of focus.
Awesome. Yeah. So we invest pre-seed to Series A. Smallest check size is... Well, so it used to be 250. It's actually interesting because we've seen that for some pre-seed companies, that's actually too much money. So it's the one time where we actually decreased our check size to 150 for some of the super, super almost pre-seed company.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Up to 3 million is our check size. And then stage, we actually have awesome people on our team who cover different sectors. So Batul on our team is focused on justice. So looking at folks who've either been involved in the criminal justice system and tech to help them, their family members, or help avoid folks in the criminal justice system, as well as fintech. Adam looks at healthcare and fintech. Brian covers education. Alex is the environment and fintech. I focus on our healthcare investments, future of work. Aya, who's our analyst, is awesome. She covers everything, but specifically interested in things with a data focus, age tech, healthcare, quantified self.
Yep. And anything personalization.
Yeah. Anything personal, like how to make you a better, bigger, badder, stronger person like she is.
Yeah. Do you want to say a bit about one or two of your more prominent investments or successes, or maybe one of your favorite health related investments?
They're all my favorite.
All right. Well, okay. One of your favorite.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of really great companies. I think, you know, just who's top of mind, who I talked to today, one of the companies, Simple Health Kit, healthcare company, woman founder. She came to us, you know, her name is Sheena Menzies, came to us very early. And she said, there is so much stigma associated with STDs. I want to make it so that anyone who has STD can find out in a confidential, private way, and they don't wait until the STD has become something more like cervical cancer. And I was like, 100%, because specifically in communities of color, I think sex itself is, you know, there's a negative connotation, not to mention STDs. And so what they do is provide at-home STD tests, starting with for women, that you can test yourself, you can find out at home. It's low cost. They're already in stores. I mean, this is, if you look at-home tests, most of them are 100 plus. This is less than $50. And then if you do test positive, you can get connected online to a healthcare provider who will provide you with medication to help you treat that STD. And to me, it's just like, how many, you know, women's lives will this help in the long run? Because I think people have suffered needlessly because of the stigma and the shame associated with STDs. So really love what they're doing. And, you know, that's one of the few consumer products that we are in, because I think it's very hard for folks to find that piece where it's low cost enough for low income people, but still high quality in terms of what the service or the tech is providing. The other one is on our future of work side, a company called Boot Up, and the founder is Chandler. And what he really does is helping folks, you know, I think we've seen a lot of tech boot camps, but we don't see what happens when people graduate from those boot camps. And so connecting, you know, folks from those tech boot camps to technical careers, providing that bridge. And then also, even more so, making so that folks don't have to quit their jobs. So working with companies, large retailers who have, you know, folks who work as a cashier at, say, Best Buy, you know, they probably have an interest in tech and for the long term don't want to be a cashier. So how do you help them transition into go from just a job to a career, something that's going to help, you know, where they see a salary progression and they can actually build the wealth. And so Chandler has worked with others to help put together that curriculum so that he can partner with those companies to help provide them that training. So longer term, you know, their employees are not coming just for a job, but, you know, see themselves moving up in the company.
Yeah, those are good ones. And, you know, we have a couple investments together with you guys, but we will do all the co-investing we could possibly get, because I think those I'm excited about those too. I wish we'd heard about them sooner. And
we need to share more. Exactly, definitely more sharing. I get you, what you're throwing down. Both, we'll send both you guilty. More deals.
Yeah, both. Well, us too. And then talk about Miles Traveled, because I just interviewed the KPORs and they pointed out that like one of the KPOR Center level playing field programs put you through Cal, and you have quite a background and you landed here. You're a huge success, but it didn't start out obvious. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. I was born a venture capitalist.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so for me, I grew up in San Francisco. I grew up in the Bayview. There's not that many people of color in the Bayview anymore. So it's sad to see, but I'm very, very thankful. I actually dropped my niece off at school this morning. And my school counselor is actually her school counselor. And so that is 30 plus years later. And she's still, you know, she was having the kids say to them the same thing, you know, that we used to say is like, I am somebody, everybody is somebody. And it's kind of like recognizing the humanity in others. And I like almost started crying because I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember saying that in the morning. Yeah. And it's just like, it's, you know, it's like, how did you know, or what changed for you? And I think she is someone who like told me I could be something. And so I always felt like I couldn't let her down. And that kind of, you know, I think the something I wanted to be changed around along the way. So, you know, for me, I went into Cal intending to be a doctor. I, growing up, had, you know, was diagnosed at a young age, at five, with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. So had to go to the hospital a lot. Was very thankful that I had such amazing doctors and specialists who helped take care of me, helped me live a relatively normal life as a kid. Even the times when I was hospitalized, you know, they still made you go to school. And I was like, oh, but I'm in the hospital. But they still tried to keep it normal. And for me, I was like, I want to make sure that I help people who are dealing with health challenges in that same way. You know, when I got to Cal, realized that the becoming a doctor, that path wasn't for me, but I had the chance, you know, have always also loved tech, had the chance to work at a couple of different tech startups, and also meet Mitch and Frida because they were the donors for the scholarship program that I went to Cal on. And unbeknownst to me, I actually worked for, I think, two of the startups that Mitch had invested in. And so got to know them a little. I would see him around the office and be like, Mitch, what are you doing here? I like did not, you know, turns out he was an investor for that, but got to know them a little better through that. Once I graduated from Cal, worked at a startup that I think lasted less than 30 days from when I started. So I don't know if I was bad luck or that was just startups back then. And then that startup folded. And I had been reaching out to folks on the Cape Horror Center side and let them know that happened. And they're like, hey, come work here with us on the non-. So I started at the Cape Horror Center on the nonprofit side. And then as Mitch and Frida were kind of building out Cape Horror Capital, they were like, hey, we know you've always liked tech. And what would you think about venture capital? And I didn't even know, honestly, much about venture capital at the time. But my dad is like, oh, yeah, if, you know, if opportunity presents itself, say yes and figure out the rest later. So I said yes and figured out the rest later. Yeah.
Plus, it's got capital in the title. And if you're a parent, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, lucky enough, yeah, I've been here a while. Like I left to go to business school. I was at Fuqua, go Duke, and focused on my MBA with the focus in health sector administration. And then had the chance to work at Village Capital, leading their global programs throughout the world, which was amazing. And what I learned very early on is that entrepreneurs all around the world have the same need, and that is for capital. Went to work at Fresco, which is another smaller impact investing fund, and then came back to KPOR. They told me, they were like, hey, would you want to run our healthcare investing practice? I was like, yes. And so that's really what brought me back. And I think I've been back for like 7 years now. It's been great.
And we're going to shift gears here in a bit and talk about mission as a competitive advantage. But would you say that your background and your miles traveled, as KPOR, the whole organization likes to say, is a benefit in your job? And how?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think it's even in little things, in terms of, I was on a call today with a company. I've had, unfortunately, the sad thing is I've had a lot of different chronic illnesses, but the good thing about that is I've had to educate myself about those chronic illnesses. Uh-huh, and so Now I'm investing in companies and I like have firsthand experience. I'm like, oh, what about this? Like, have you thought about this? And then also not just as like a patient, but have also seen what my mom specifically struggled with as a low-income person dealing with a kid, you know, not just me, but also my brother had chronic illnesses. So trying to navigate the healthcare system as a low-income person who didn't have access to much resources. And so I think that frame of mind is current with me, because I think of my mom and I think of young Lily, like how would she get access to something like this? And so every time, you know, there's a decision to make this investment, it's kind of leading with that in mind, because we don't, you know, I think the great thing about KPOR is we're not just investing in tech that's really fun for you, but we're investing in need to have technology that we, and because it's need to have technology, we want to make sure that the people who need it can have it. And so the big thing is not like, is this cool or is this game changing, but is it being built in a way that is accessible to all of the people who really need it? And, you know, my life experience and, you know, still having family members who are still struggling every day and, you know, who are low income is front of mind when I'm, you know, making those investment decisions.
And the company you just mentioned, the women's health company doing the STD stuff, is a great example of access, right? That's exactly what you're talking about.
100% Simple Health Kit. I mean, you know, Sheena is starting in the US and eventually wants to expand to India, where, you know, sexual health is even more of a taboo. But she said that. She's like, my goal eventually is to make the cost of this kit less than $5 so that it's accessible for all. But, you know, being able to invest with that in mind, but also invest in founders who are bringing their lived experience. I mean, she created the company because of her lived experience, because of what she saw her friends going through and people in her community going through. And so many people, so many of our founders in our portfolio, that is why they built out what they did, is because of their personal experience. And I also feel like that's why they're bringing the passion to what they're building. And at the end of the day, we think those are the folks who are more likely to stick it out when times get hard, because they're not just doing it because they want to be famous or be on the cover of Forbes, but they're doing it because they really feel like it's essential to have that change in the world. And that's whose story we want to be a part of.
Yep. And they may still be famous and on the cover of Forbes at some point, but that's not the only objective, right? It's sort of both they want to have. So let's shift to the main focus of this series of conversations, is about how social and environmental mission can be a competitive advantage. And for us, it's all about like that just genuine, deep personal drive people have to do something important that means something to them. Just like you with your background in chronic illness, like it matters to you and you care. More so than someone doing photo sharing or whatever it might be, because they think they might, you know, go public and make a bunch of money. Not to belittle that, but I think there's something more on the mission-driven side. And so can you talk about that? Maybe do you see that in the startups you're working with? Where do you see that manifest itself in fundraising, in hiring, in PR, in winning new customers? You know, would you agree it can be an advantage, and how so?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we see the building for better, if I can steal your
woot
a little bit.
Have at it.
Yeah, like I think we see that every single turn. I mean, our companies on the healthcare side, education side, they're able to tap into non-dilutive funding, which we know every VC loves, you know, whether it be in the form of grants or PRIs, because of what they're doing has kind of this social impact and a larger focus. And we also see, I mean, I think of Thalmus, one of our healthcare companies, who's actually, their whole thing is like, how do we help make the residency process more equal for individuals and actually more efficient? Match Day was just like less than a week ago, but they actually partnered with our research arm, the foundation's research arm, to examine, you know, what is the residency match process like for communities of color. And so them writing this paper, which again, they were doing it because they felt like it was important, actually led them to get a large contract. I unfortunately can't disclose how much, but it was a very lucrative contract that came out of the research that they were doing. Again, I think because they felt like it was important to do that. Likewise, we have companies. I was on the phone with one of my founders earlier today, and they're, you know, they said they just hired someone onto their team, I think it was a project manager, I forget, from one of the big tech companies who's taking almost a half of their salary because she felt connected to the mission and wanted to do something that she knew would have a lasting impact. And then, you know, I think day to day, you know, investors, when you have decisions of where to deploy your capital, we totally saw that for us when we were fundraising. People are like, hey, I can invest in anything. We're choosing to invest in you, not just because you say you're going to do good, but we've seen the good that other companies have provided for you. So there was someone, I mean, we're early investors in Ginger and Omada. Ginger, which got taken over by Headspace,
yeah,
one of our
both LPs. Huge successes, yeah.
Yeah, super excited for that. And again, you make these investments and you do it because you think you'll have a positive impact. You don't do it thinking like when a potential LP will have used it and they said that it you know, fundamentally changed their life for the better And that was the reason why they were making an investment in you. And so, you know, I say our products don't fit nicely into a swag bag because, you know, I'm like, changing the world doesn't fit into a swag bag. And that's what we do. And that's what our companies do on a day-to-day basis. And so many people resonate with their stories. And I think, you know, I think that even we talked about Forbes, and I think so many folks have gotten their stories published. I promise one of the companies that is helping it. So helping people be able to pay their electricity bills in segments, like the same way you pay, you know, for your Peloton over time. You have a high unexpected electricity bill, water bill, you should be able to pay that over time. And because of what they were doing, they were helping so many people, you know, they get these constant requests to be featured because it's, you know, again, I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier in terms of the disconnect from, you know, tech and the middle America. People like to see tech being used for good and like highlight those stories.
Say what Omada is for those who may not know.
Omada provides coaching for individuals with chronic diseases, specifically prediabetes, diabetes, and hypertension. So the goal is to help provide you tools to stop the disease from progressing further. So help you if you're pre-diabetic, get out of that range. If you're diabetic, to get your numbers under control. And the same thing if you're hypertension. If you have hypertension, to help lower your blood pressure.
And say, and why do you mention these companies? It's about outperforming because of their social mission, or what do you think is the main, what's the point here on mentioning these two companies?
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. I mean, Omada is like a runaway plane. That this is a company we invested in a while ago, but definitely one that is, you know, I think because of it, it has a great business model, but the heart of what they do is a socially, you know, social impact piece in terms of who is disproportionately affected by hypertension and diabetes. That's communities of color. And so that's why we were excited about the company.
And you think their mission is a path to outperforming? Because it seems like they are, clearly.
Yeah, no, I think definitely. I think they lead with mission first and feel like that's what attracts people, especially, you know, if you're in healthcare, you get so much stuff thrown at you. And so if the only way to kind of break through the noise is to show that you're patient first and that you're doing this because you really want to see positive outcomes for patients. I think so many times, you know, if you look at other technology, other like medicines, therapeutics, people actually make more money if you stay sick longer. But it's, you know, Omada is a type of company, if they do their job right, you will no longer need them in terms of the coaching that they provide.
Yeah. So in terms of outperforming because of social impact, say a bit about your own in fundraising, with your own experience when you meet with founders. Obviously, they know coming in the door, you guys want to hear about their social mission, their environmental mission. What would your advice be to people, you know, who come and talk to you about investment? And then when they go out to the broader community that may not be all social impact focused, many of your companies are backed by top firms that, you know, like impact, but they're not, it's not their express purpose, right? So talk about how you think about it when you're talking with them, and then how you coach them to go out to other firms that may not be so focused on the impact.
Yeah. I mean, so the interesting thing is that a lot of times people will come and we'll be like, yeah, Mark, tell us about the impact. And, you know, folks will say like, this is the first time an investor of Axe have requested that we talk about that.
Yeah.
And they'll say some of our other mentors or advisors told us to take that out of the deck. Uh-huh. And, you know, our big advice to our companies and folks we're seeing was like, you shouldn't have to hide. If that's why you're building this, say that's why you're building this. Because I think at the end of the day, that's how you have to be honest about your reason for building the company, because they, you know, and realize that that may not be for all investors. We very early on have seen, you know, investors try to strip out the impact of our companies if it means making 50 cents more for every, you know, product sold. And it's really sad because we're just like, well, you can sell more overall products versus trying to strip out that like 50 cents more. And our founders have to fight with their investors over this. So, you know, I think two things is like, if the core reason that you're building your product is you want to have a positive impact, don't be afraid to say it, but also know that not every investor is going to agree with it, but the ones that are for you will get your story. And then, you know, be very careful about who you choose to invest with, because it's hard to get rid of your investor. It's hard to buy them all out. And, you know, I say it's harder than getting a divorce. It's really, really time consuming. And so make sure you make the right choice the first time. You know, for KPOR, for us, we're looking for people's why, especially at pre-seed when there really isn't enough, you know, much built. We look for the team and then their purpose and the mission. What do they hope long-term to accomplish from their product? And so if you're coming to see us, please tell us that, especially if it's in sectors we traditionally invest in education, healthcare, finance, et cetera. We know market sizes and we know, you know, alternatives, all of that. So all of that is going to be really repetitive. And what we're really looking for is like, what is, you know, how does the world look different if your product is successful?
Got it. And then when your companies are going out to raise, so do you say, you know, talk about the impact, do they lead with it? Or do they lead with, we're going to make a lot of money? Or is it all just one big thing that like, we have this background, we're passionate, you know, say, talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the folks who've been successful manage to find the right mix of both. It's like, we're going to help a lot of people and make a lot of money in the process. Because I don't think they're, you know, I don't think money in itself, we don't believe money is inherently evil. We are venture capitalists at the end of the day. And so I don't, you know, for our folks who are successful, they're able to show like, we're going to, you know, our mission is to help a lot of people, but every person we help, that is dollars that we're bringing into the company. Again, I think that for some folks, the message doesn't resonate with everyone and they get turned away from pure profit, you know, a lot of pure profit investors. But if you look at the majority of people we co-invest in, it's actually more traditional VCs where they're able to see the value in the company that's being built. You know, they may not care about the impact as much as we do, but, you know, we at KPOR Capital are investing in growth businesses. You know, it's not concessionary returns. And so part of our goal is to help people tell that story in an appropriate way so that people see the value there and the potential.
Yep. And so certainly don't hide it, but also be sensitive to your context and make sure you are playing up that this will also make a lot of money.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I tell people that their deck should be like their resume, right? Like you take if you're applying for a job in the right way, because maybe people don't do this, but you have like a master resume which has every single job that you've ever worked on. And then as you go to apply, what do? You take pieces of each of those jobs and craft your job application for the position that you're applying to. The same way in terms of when you're, you know, think of your deck as applying for funding from those investors. And there should be core parts of your pitch deck that every investor sees. But the first thing you should do before you apply for investment is look at the investor's website, look at what they have invested in before, look at what they say they care about, and then take pieces of that master deck and put it into the deck for that investor. So you shouldn't send out 10 identical decks. Even if you're sending decks out to social impact investors, better. And KPOR, we both care about impact, but with very different focuses. So, you know, go on, read Better's website, read KPOR's website, and make sure you craft your deck appropriately. I mean, VCs were also a little bit, you know, I don't want to say narcissist, but, you know, we like hearing our messaging echo back to us. So if you say like, hey, this is how our company is helping to close gaps, we're like, well, look for that keyword. Oh, close gaps. They understand, you know, our motto, our pitch, and that will make us kind of sit up a little more.
Yeah. And I think it's apparent that both KPOR Capital and Better Ventures feel that backing underrepresented founders is a path to outperformance because they're overlooked, maybe because of unconscious bias, maybe because of conscious bias, who knows? But that's an actual, you know, investment opportunity that it's a way to make money to work with founders who are underrepresented. Would you say then talk about diversity and inclusion within the companies we're backing? talk about how that can be an advantage to them, and they can outperform the market by hiring a diverse workforce, or assuming you agree with that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think that it's super, you know, I think the same way impact was a competitive advantage because people weren't doing that. You know, investing in diverse founders is a competitive advantage because you get to do deals that people, for whatever reason, are not looking at. And we have had countless times, I think, where it, you know, people say the business case for diversity. I think one tangible one is we had one of our healthcare companies who literally lost out on a contract because they didn't have a single person on their team who spoke Spanish. So there wasn't anyone to fulfill the contract. They lost out on a multimillion-dollar contract. Easy as that. You know, I think there's countless times where our companies are actually brought in to take over for other companies because there was a lack of cultural competency on the first vendor. Like they didn't understand, you know, the needs of the mothers who are being served. And so now this healthcare provider is bringing in one of our companies because they have a diverse team and they've, you know, specifically built that team to address the needs of the communities that are being served. It's the simple things, because I think that, you know, if you look at ethnic diversity, racial diversity, sexual orientation, et cetera, there is different lived experiences, and having people on your team who can speak to those lived experiences is so helpful, especially if, you know, we tell our, you know, we've never explicitly said or set diversity metrics for our companies. What our language is like having a team that reflects the communities that you want to serve, because it only makes sense if you want to serve those people that you build for those folks. And listen, if you want to serve, if your target community is 20-year-old white guys who went to Harvard, then it's fine if, you know, that's what your team looks like. But if you want to serve folks outside of that demographic, then you should build, you know, you should build a team that looks like the folks you want to serve.
Yep. And just like pioneering in social impact, I think you guys have pioneered in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and have put it front and center for longer than others, like before it was cool, I would say. And, you know, say a bit about those roots and how you all think of that as something that's, you know, important for your success.
Yeah, no, I mean, Frida Kapor Klein, huge shout out to her, because I think she's always pushed us to be better and to do better. You know, 2016, in collaboration with our founders, we created the Founders Commitment, which was a pledge that our founders took to have their team diversity reflect the customer's diversity. I think internally for us, you know, we don't want to just say things. We also want to be able to put them forward. And so when we've hired for positions, if we've seen, and this happens every time for some reason, when we hire like for investment team positions, we always get like, it's usually like 70 guys and 10 women. And, you know, we have had times where he's like, this is not the demographic split that we want. And so we'll stop our search and then explicitly go out to, you know, post on groups where we know women interested in venture capital are, or, you know, if we don't have a certain amount of, you know, Latino individuals applying for roles, we'll go and post there. And, you know, I don't want to say it's easy. It's not easy. It definitely still requires work. It still requires, I mean, we've been doing this for a long time. Frida has been doing it longer than us. And it still doesn't just, it's not like you can kind of, it's not a set it and forget it. You still have to be intentional about it. And even in the things that, you know, how we run our company, we have on our team, like a parent. So it's like when we are hosting a retreat that's on a weekend, what allowances are we making for that parent if we say we want to be an inclusive environment? And so it's like every single thing that you do, you kind of have to be considerate of different people's life and how it would affect them. And it's not easy. And sometimes there's expense associated with it. But I think in how that has come back is that you have workers who are appreciative and see that you recognize them as full people and not just workers, but like, you know, full individuals. And then I think that when we have gone out to hire, we have gotten great feedback in terms of the number of applicants we had and like our reputation in the world is like, oh, well, we hear you guys do this. And so, I feel like that's a couple of reasons we continue doing it besides that it's right.
Yeah, agreed. So I want to get to our final question here in a minute, which is what the mission that you personally are on. But Frida and Mitch just published a book. You and Brian are both featured in the book. Do you want to say a bit about why everyone should go out and buy that book, and maybe anything about the appearance you and Brian make?
Yeah. Don't buy the book because of us. Although if you're interested in how we got to where we are, that is in there. I feel like there have been so many books about venture capital, but not as many books about like the impact side and the people side of venture capital. For me, what I really don't like about the tech ecosystem and the venture capital community is you always see the finished product. And so if you're coming into venture at the beginning, you think everyone is a superstar and you don't understand, like, as you said, their distance travel, what it took to get to where they are. What does it take to build a $1 billion company? What does it take to be a partner at a venture capital fund? And I think that not only does Mitch and Frida's book examine the stories of our founders who've built these successful businesses, it examines Brian and I's story, what it took us to get to where we are, but it also kind of provides best practices in terms of building out impact-based businesses. And I think that that is definitely something that needs to be in the environment. So if you ever want to kind of get the recipe that folks followed in order to build these successful companies and careers, I think that's in the book. There's also just some really funny stories. And it's not too heavy of a read, and, you know, may make you cry a couple places. At least I did, remembering some of the stories of our founders. So.
Yeah. And there's no one better to tell these stories than Frida and Mitch. I mean, maybe they didn't invent the whole thing, but they certainly did play a major role in championing the success of impact investing and showing that you can do it and that you can actually outperform. I should say, you guys also published a report showing, you know, specifically all your numbers, even stripping out the non-impact ones like Uber and Twilio, and that you guys are still killing it and getting amazing returns. And so, you know, kudos to, you know, these are you all, and they are sort of in the best position to tell these stories. Okay, so here's our big question to wrap things up. If I were to say that your personal mission, Ulily, is on a mission to what?
My mission is to use tech to help improve the quality of people's lives. I was going to say to better people's lives because you guys are better ventures, but I didn't want to steal your thunder there. So
there you have it. Ulily Anovakpuri, Kapor Capital, on a mission to use tech to help people improve their lives. Thanks so much for having the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Mission Driven. To find out more about Better Ventures, visit us at better.vc or on Twitter @BetterVentures.